Chapter 93. An elite Royal Navy Color Guard unit carried the dark wood casket down the steps of the neoclassic Anglican chapel and carefully placed it onto an ornate 19th-century gun carriage. The eulogy had been long, as was the norm for a royal ceremonial funeral, with obligatory remarks recited by the Prime Minister and the Prince of Wales, among other notables. The sentiments were blustery and patriotic, but not very personal, for no one still living had even known the deceased. The funeral of Sir John Alexander Franklin was a grand and noble affair, and, at the same time, an uplifting event. The discovery of Franklin's body aboard the Erebus had rekindled a nostalgic romance amongst the British people, rekindling the days of glory when Wellington commanded the ground and Nelson ruled the seas. Franklin's exploits in the Arctic, a largely forgotten historical footnote to modern generations, was regaled in detail to a suddenly enthralled public that clamored for more. The public fascination had placed great pressure on the team of archaeologists and forensic specialists tasked with examining the ship and retrieving his body. Working round the clock, they solved two key mysteries even before Franklin's body arrived in London and was placed on view in Westminster Abbey. Though a variety of ails contributed to his death at age 61, the scientists determined that a case of tuberculosis, easily contracted within the tight confines of a winter-bound ship, most likely finished him off. More intriguing was the revelation as to why a large portion of the Erebus's crew had turned mad. Based on the account in the ship's log, which Pitt had sent to British authorities, the scientists tested a sample of ruthenium found in an officer's cabin. Assay testing revealed that the South African ore contained high quantities of mercury. When heated on the cook stove in buckets and bedpans, the ore released toxic fumes which accumulated in the galley and crew's quarters. As with the Mad Hatters of later years, mercury poisoning created neurological damage and psychotic reactions after months of exposure. The tragic myriad events just added to the allure of the story, and the public flocked to pay their respects to Franklin. The gates of Kensal Green, an ancient sprawling cemetery west of London akin to Forest Lawn, had to be closed on the day of his funeral after 30,000 people congregated on its storied grounds. It was a hot and humid summer day, far removed from the Arctic conditions in which he had died. The horse-drawn caisson pulled slowly away from the chapel, rattling over a cobblestone path, as the steel-shod hooves of the Black Shire mares clacked loudly with each dropped step. With a long procession following behind on foot, the caisson rolled slowly toward a secluded section of the cemetery crowned by towering chestnut trees. The driver pulled to a stop next to a family plot fronted by an open gate. A freshly dug grave lay empty alongside a tomb marked Lady Jane Franklin, 1792-1875. Franklin's beloved wife, more than anyone, had resolved the fate of the lost expedition. Through tireless appeal and expense, she had personally outfitted no fewer than 5 relief expeditions on her own. Scouring the Arctic in search of her husband and his ships, the early expeditions had failed, along with those sent by the British government. It was another Arctic explorer, Francis McClintock, who had ultimately discovered Franklin's fate. Sailing the steam yacht Fox on Lady Franklin's behalf, he'd found important relics and a note on King William Island that revealed Franklin's death in 1847 and the crew's subsequent abandonment of the ships trapped in the ice. It had taken 168 years since kissing her goodbye on the shores of the Thames, but John Franklin was reunited with his wife once more. His soul would have been happy for another reason, as he was laid to rest beside Jane. When a Royal Navy frigate had retrieved his coffin from the Erebus and transported it back to England, the ship had traveled the long route, through the Bering Strait and down the Pacific to the Panama Canal. In death, if not in life, Sir Franklin had finally sailed the Northwest Passage.